Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome to the Dear Lovejoy podcast, sponsored by Cooker, 100-degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. Today's podcast, I'm trying to answer the question, how to breathe properly so you can stop snoring. Turns out snoring is very bad for your health. Joining me with the answers and a lot more about breathing and its connection to health is James Nestor, who's written a book called Breath, The New Science of a Lost Art. Hello, James.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Where are you? Where am I speaking to you from, actually? You're in America, right? Whereabouts?
In San Francisco.
Ah, San Francisco. Okay. So can you help? I'm going to talk to you all about your book because I've got to say, it's an incredible book. I've absolutely loved it. And I knew so little about breathing. So we'll go through that. But can you actually help us with the not snoring phenomenon? Because I actually do snore.
I can offer some advice. I'm not a therapist or a doctor. Luckily, I've spoken to the leaders in the field over several years and picked up a bunch of their hacks so I can parlay what I've learned from them over to you. And I think the first thing we have to learn about snoring is that snoring is caused by the soft tissues at the back of the mouth being too flexible and flexing inward. Sounds just like that. I'm sure everyone's familiar with that sound. And just as you had said, snoring is incredibly injurious to the body. Neurological issues, metabolic issues. We usually only look at sleep apnea as being this big culprit of poor health because of sleeping, but snoring is so bad. I was just talking to an expert about this yesterday. So now, to try to get rid of snoring, what I've found, what I've been told by various experts at Stanford and elsewhere, is that people who have mild or moderate snoring, I know this is going to sound like quackery, but stick with me here. You can take a teeny piece of tape and you can place that just on your lips, in the center of your lips. This does not mean a fat strip of duct tape across the mouth. No, don't go on YouTube looking for advice because there's a bunch of BS on that. But a small little piece of surgical tape that has a very light adhesive, place that at the center of your lips. And I've found in my own little studies here, for 4 out of 5 of my friends who were chronic snorers and been snorers for decades, they no longer snore just using this hack. And what this does is it forces the mouth to stay shut. You can remove it at any time, so you're not going to suffocate or anything, but it forces the mouth shut. When you breathe through the nose, all of that pressure pushes those soft tissues back a little further and opens your airways. So this is all based on science. They're studying it at Stanford. Other researchers and experts have used it for decades with really great benefits.
James, I've tried this because I read your book and I thought I do snore and I have woken myself up with snoring and it's getting worse. I'm aware I'm a mouth breather and I want to get into all that in more depth in a minute. And so I read in your book about the snoring and how it's best to breathe through your nose. So I have been taping my mouth shut and I must let you know the first time I did it, I woke up in the middle of the night panicking that I was suffocating, which was so surreal. I'm now getting myself into a stage where I'm finding it more comfortable. I've done it probably 6 nights now in a row, and I'm finding it more comfortable, though it's still quite a strange thing. My sleep seems to be, would it be right in saying this? My sleep seems to be deeper. And when I do wake up in my sleep, I seem to drift straight back to sleep. And the final thing, which is a thing that you mentioned in your book, is that when I wake up, I know now no longer need to go to the toilet. Why on earth is that?
So your experience of this mouth taping being uncomfortable is pretty much the universal experience. I had the same exact thing. I said, there's no way I'm going to do this. I lasted about 2 minutes the first night, about 5 minutes the next night. It took me a couple of weeks to really get comfortable with it. Because what's happening is you've been spending your life, a third of your life, with your mouth open and breathing. So your nose is not acclimated to breathing all this time, right? So the more you use the nose, the more it's going to open. And we know this to be true. So the longer you do this mouth tape, the easier and easier it's going to get, just like anything else. You can try another thing, which is sleeping on your back definitely exacerbates snoring. Because if you think about it, you just got gravity working against you, just pushing those tissues, you know, into your airway. So try sleeping on your side. Some people get so extreme into this that they tape a sock or a tennis ball to their back so that they sleep on their sides. And I would suggest downloading an app. There's a free one called Snore Lab where you can actually trace whether or not you're snoring. And every morning you get this readout of looking at your snoring health because it records you the whole night. As creepy as that is, I've found this to be a wonderful tool.
James, yeah. Are you now no longer taping your mouth? Have you got to the stage where your body, your subconscious learns to keep your mouth shut whilst you're sleeping?
I tape my mouth every single night. When I travel, I tape my mouth every night. I wish I had one of those big pronounced solid jaws that could naturally stay shut. I do not. And I've noticed when I don't tape, I wake up, my mouth is dry, I'm peeing throughout the night. It's such a huge difference. And this isn't a placebo effect. This is basic biology. Breathing through the nose is going to get you 20% more oxygen per breath. It's going to save you 40% more humidity. So you're not going to need to drink water throughout the night, which is one of the reasons you're not going to need to keep peeing. So many benefits to it.
James, I suppose we need to get to the point of why you wrote the book in the first place, because it looks like it took you an eternity to write. It's many years, isn't it? This took you, this book.
Yeah. And, you know, every book is a pain for every author. At least that's what I've heard. But this one was especially had its trials and tribulations. I had been interested in this subject for years since I had a very strange experience doing this pranayama breath work here in San Francisco. We've got all kinds of breath work, yoga stuff going on here. And after about 10 minutes of just sitting in a corner of a cool room and breathing in this rhythmic pattern, I completely sweated through my t-shirt, through my socks. There were blotches on my pants. I mean, it was absolutely bizarre. And all my doctor friends couldn't describe what happened. They said, oh, you must have had a fever, or oh, the room must have been too hot. None of those things were true. So I didn't know what to do with this experience because I'm a science journalist. I didn't want to write a memoir. So I just kind of filed it away until I met these people, free divers, who had mastered the art of breathing so much that they could hold their breath for 7, 8, 9 minutes at a time. And they told me that learning how to breathe in these ways not only allow you to dive very deep, hold your breath for so long, but it had so many other applications for health and longevity in the terrestrial plane as well.
So then you decided you needed to write a book about this.
I was writing a book about the human connection to the ocean when I met these free divers, but they kept telling me these absolutely bizarre stories about how this one guy was able to breathe in ways to fight off E. coli after he was injected with it, and how dozens of other people had done the same thing, about how another guy was able to breathe in ways to sit in a pool of ice for an hour and not have his core temperature go down.
Is that Wim Hof?
It's Wim Hof and it's Maurice Debar. Before Wim Hof, there was Maurice Debar, who did almost everything that Wim has done, but he did it 30 years earlier without a lot of publicity. Huh. So people have been doing this. Wim's great. You know, he's brought awareness to breathing to the world, which is so awesome. But what he's doing, what he's teaching, has been around for at least 1,000 years.
Yeah, see, James, what I've learned from doing my podcast, and I've interviewed Wim Hof on this podcast, and mm-hmm. I've interviewed Mir Kreiger, a sleep expert. I've interviewed all sorts of people about breathing and sleep. I think when we decide to become healthy, we do a lot of health stuff on this podcast. We think about diet, which I've done quite a lot on gut diet, gut health and things like that. We think about exercise. But the two things that I feel are more important than anything are sleeping, which we do for 8 hours a day, so it must be pretty important to us, and breathing, which we do 24 hours a day. And it seems to me that we've neglected our breathing a lot. However, I must point out, I've always found the breathing thing quite bizarre because we do it sort of naturally. It's like me saying I need to control my blood circulation. I can't do that. It's pretty impossible. I can get my heart rate up and down, but I can't control my lymph system or my blood circulation. And so I'm worried that there's not too much I can do with my breathing because it's my subconscious that is affecting it. A, how have we got to where we've got to? And B, can we control it? Let's start with the first one. How have we got to where we breathe so badly?
So what all these super breathers have shown us is that so much of the science textbooks, medical textbooks, are actually wrong. So we have this lever that we can turn on and off, and it's our breathing. So exactly as you said, we can't control our kidney function. We can't control how our stomachs digest or process food. We can't control our liver function or our heart consciously. But when we control our breathing, we can influence all of these functions. We can influence our nervous system. We can influence immune function. So breathing is this lever and anchor. And it's wonderful that we don't have to think about doing it. We can do it automatically. But when we take control of it, we can reclaim control of our bodies. And that's what so many people with asthma and autoimmune problems, even snoring and sleep apnea, are showing us. And I don't view breathing and sleep as separate things. Almost every sleep problem is tied to a breathing problem. So I view sleep and breathing as you have to figure out the breathing if you're going to sleep well. There's no way you're ever going to sleep well unless you're breathing well. And so those are two, you know, very connected topics.
So tell us how we got to the fact that we can't breathe. You talk about it a lot in your book, how we're the only mammal really which has poor teeth and poor alignment and bad jaws. How have we got to being such poor breathers?
Yeah, when I mentioned to a lot of friends that I was writing a book about breathing, they thought, why the hell would you do that? Like, everyone already breathes. Obviously we're alive, we're breathing, that's fine. But as I dug deeper into this subject, I started working with biological anthropologists, and they explained to me that our problems with breathing are not only psychological, when you have anxiety, when you have asthma, you can panic and breathe improperly, but they're mostly anatomical. And these problems have developed, especially in the last 500 years. Our skulls have changed so quickly and so drastically, and our mouths have gotten so small that our teeth no longer fit in our faces. They grow in crooked. And there's another problem with that. When you have a mouth that small, means you're going to have a smaller airway, which is going to make it harder to breathe, harder to get air in and air out of. And so much of this, what's happened, so many of these problems that we're suffering from can either be exacerbated or sometimes caused by this poor, struggling to breathe action that we take all the time. And I thought this was fascinating because I'd never heard this in biology class, in anthropology or anything, but anyone can go online at any time and look at an ancient skull, and there's a 99% chance that skull is going to have perfect teeth. No braces, no headgear, no wisdom teeth removed, perfect teeth. You take a modern skull, you can look at my skull, you can look at anyone else that I know, 90% of us have crooked teeth, which means we're likely going to have a mouth that's too small for our faces and can possibly have airway difficulties from that.
So what is this? Is this a growth of our, you sort of assign two things to, or a few things to it? Talking has changed because we've changed the way our throats work and our tongues and things like that. Our brain has got bigger and our food has got softer, which they're the three aspects you're saying has changed, aren't they?
Most of these changes happen over extremely long scales. 10,000, 100,000, million years, right? So when you're looking at the size of our brain growing, yeah, that started happening very rapidly about a million years ago when our brains grew 50%. And that was tied to how we were cooking foods and processing foods. So that brain needed real estate, needed space. It took it from the front of our faces. That's fine because these changes happened over such a long amount of time. And, you know, with the hyoid bone decreasing and the larynx decreasing, going down in our throats, that happened also about 50,000 years ago, happened over a long amount of time. That allowed us to have to use vocalizations in more ways. Some people feel that that syncing of the larynx allowed us to develop language. Other people say that language developed because of syncing, you know, chicken and egg stuff. Doesn't matter. It happened. And language developed at that time as well. But all of this, this severe deleterious change that's happened to our mouths happened in, since industrialization. So it's tied to the foods that we began eating. We used to chew for 4 hours a day. Now, you know, we can go through throughout a day without chewing much at all, eating smoothies, avocados, omelets, oatmeal, on and on. And that's the main reason why our mouths have gotten so small.
I blame America for all those food trends, especially San Francisco. Come on, you guys out there, you're forcing avocado on us.
You should be blaming America, because I think of the crap that I was fed in the 70s and 80s. You know, I mean, this was absolute garbage food, and it took everyone 20 years to figure it out. But still, even what's considered healthy food today, you go to a healthy restaurant, they're going to give you a smoothie. They're going to give you some soft quinoa. It's still so soft. And that's not how we evolved.
So should we be chewing then? Should we, are there things like chewing gum? Are they important for you?
I think early in life, chewing is vital to developing proper skeleture and proper muscle mass in the face. And we know this because they've done studies looking at infants who are breastfed versus those who are bottle fed. And breastfeeding requires this very intense sucking motion, right? That helps to push the face outward and helps to widen that mouth. And bottle feeding does not. And then after that, so many kids are given this, you know, Gerber's soft food. They're given applesauce and stuff. That's not how kids 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 100,000 years ago were weaned onto foods. They were weaned onto harder foods. And so chewing, especially at early ages, yes, makes a big difference. And they've correlated breastfeeding, bottle feeding to snoring and sleep apnea and all that. Mm. You know, when you get to adulthood, we can do some stuff, but we're pretty set. I wanted to see, you know, I'm in middle age. I'm way past the age where my bones have been modeling. And I wanted to see if I could improve my airway, even in middle age. And it turns out you definitely can. And chewing is a part of that puzzle.
I suppose the question a lot of my listeners will be thinking now is, what is the difference between breathing through a nose, which we can get onto it in a minute, but how many things, including allergies and asthma and everything, is important that you breathe through your nose. But what is the difference between breathing through your nose and breathing through your mouth? It's all going into the lungs. It's all delivering oxygen. So what is the difference?
For so many years, even people in the medical community didn't think that there was much of a difference. We have a mouth, we can breathe out of it. You have a nose, you can breathe out of that if you want. It's completely false. So I was working with the chief of rhinology research here at Stanford, and he's a nose nut. He's like, this is one of the most forgotten and underused organs in our body, and it plays a vital role in our health. He explained that you can imagine the lungs like an external organ, because no matter in what environment we go into, they're going to be exposed to all that air. So the nose filters particulate. It helps fight off viruses and bacteria, especially important nowadays. It humidifies air. It conditions it. It moistens it. So by the time that air gets to the lungs, it's at the body's temperature, and the lungs can absorb it so much more easily. And this is why breathing through the nose alone, just as I had mentioned earlier, can increase oxygenation by 20%, which is a huge, huge amount. If you're thinking you're taking 25,000 breaths a day, you want to do that the most efficiently as you possibly can. So the nose is also implicated in eliciting different hormones, different chemicals. It's related to blood pressure. It's related to nitric oxide, which is this wonderful molecule that's now being used to help patients with COVID. But we produce our own nitric oxide right in our nose. You know, I could give you a whole laundry list of reasons, but nasal breathing is essential. It should not be an option. NIAC, the Stanford rhinologist, told me, if a sink is plugged in your house, you're going to find a way of unplugging that as soon as you possibly can. And the nose needs to be considered the same thing.
I was actually going to ask you, so you brought it up, is there any benefits for nose breathing for COVID, or is that too Or is there? Unless, I'm just thinking it's probably such, we know so little, don't we, about coronavirus. It's a tough question to ask you, but I'm sure people in, you know, your contacts in the world of breathing have discussed this.
And I've heard a lot about this. And what I will tell you is not my opinion. I'm not qualified to have opinions like this, but Luis Ignaro, who won the Nobel Prize in the 90s for his work in nitric oxide, released this wonderful article that came out last week, where he explained how this nitric oxide that's created in the nose can help directly fight off viruses. And they've looked at nitric oxide in mammalian cells, exposed these cells to nitric oxide that had been infected with SARS, and found that those cells lived so much longer. And it's no coincidence that they're using nitric oxide to help these patients right now. And one neat trick is, so we get about 6 times the amount of nitric oxide just breathing through our nose rather than our mouth. And if we hum, for 5 minutes at a time, we can increase that nitric oxide by 15-fold. So this is one of the reasons why humming is such an important part of so many yoga practices and so many prayers and home. It's probably related to that release of nitric oxide, which not only helps to fight off viruses and pathogens, but it also drastically increases circulation. It's a vital molecule, and too few of us have enough of it in our bodies.
So James, what actually happens then when you breathe air through your nose? I mean, I'll be truthful, James. I got your book and I was like, wow, how many, this is going to be like 2 pages long. It's like breathe in, breathe out. Even though I've done lots of discussions on this podcast or conversations about breathing with Wim and other various other people, I really didn't think there was too much to breathing. And then when you start reading it, the nose is such an interesting organ, isn't it? Even what it's made of. But what actually happens when you breathe in oxygen then?
So, and your reaction was exactly my same reaction. I had in no intention of writing a whole chapter about the wonders of the nose until I started really digging in to the science behind it. And it absolutely blew me away. So our noses are covered with erectile tissue. And this is the same erectile tissue as you know where, and it acts the same. So throughout the day, one nostril is going to open up as the other is going to become, that erectile tissue is going to become engorged with blood, and it's going to close down. And then after about a half an hour to 3 or 4 hours, the other nostril is going to open up as the other nostril closes down. So there is this baffling of air, which happens naturally in our bodies in this cycle all the time from the moment we're born till the moment we die. And what they've found is that when we take in air in our right nostrils, we elicit more of an active response. We increase the heat in our bodies, circulation increases, heart rate increases. It's more of that fight or flight or sympathetic response. Left nostril has the exact opposite effect. So this has been shown to relax us more. Heart rate goes down, blood pressure goes down. So the fact that our bodies do this automatically is possibly due to them. This is a balancing method that our bodies are able to do. We get a little too anxious, maybe the left nostril is going to open. So, and there's been so little science looking at why our bodies do this, but we know that it's doing this. And we know that there's so many yoga practices that have been around for thousands of years that, guess what? They have you hold one nostril closed, breathe in through the other one to stimulate a relaxation response. So I think it's fascinating that some of these methods that have been around for centuries and centuries are now getting scientific validation.
Yeah, well, definitely. The other thing we've got in our noses, which is hair. And obviously, humans don't like hair anywhere on their bodies, apart from their heads, really, these days. And I'm losing mine, sadly, James. I've had to shave mine off. But the hairs in the nostrils are something that, you know, I spend a bit of time on Instagram. It seems more and more that people are waxing these, sticking sticks of wax up their nose and yanking them all out. Is that a bad idea, do you think?
I can't speak to exactly what kind of damage that's going to occur when people do this. I do know that those hairs are there for a reason, right? And I do know that they've done studies looking at the amount of hair and the thickness of hair and your chances of getting asthma, because those hairs help filter out this particulate. And especially if you live in a city There's so much smog and so much other stuff around, so many allergens. You want those hairs in there. Like, they aren't there randomly. So if people want to look better, I would suggest if you breathe better and adopt some really breathing, healthy breathing habits, your skin's going to probably look better. You're going to have a little spark in your eyes. That might be the better path to go if you're obsessed with aesthetics. But it seems like a pretty bad idea to me to want to remove that hair and to speed up the air going into your nose. It's slowing it down for a reason, because that slower air is easier to process and condition.
That's the thing which fascinates me about the book, is the discussion on allergies and asthma. There is a correlation between mouth breathing and allergies, isn't there? And is there a correlation between that and hay fever, or is it other sorts of allergies? But it seems, I live in London, and it seems everybody seems to be getting allergies at the moment. Obviously, we've got we're in a major city, so we've got quite a polluted environment here. There is a correlation, isn't there?
There certainly is. And if you look at asthmatics, or even people with allergies, or people with anxiety, they are traditionally going to be breathing too much. And so many of them are breathing through their mouths far more than the general population. If you think about it, it just makes perfect sense. If you are taking in all of this air that has allergens in it, and you're exposing your lungs to it, just with your mouth, without conditioning it at all, you're going to aggravate more irritation and more inflammation. So this isn't a stretch to be considering this. What I thought was so fascinating are these studies where they've had people with allergies, and especially people with asthma, and they've taught them slower nasal breathing, and it has had a huge effect on these people, a measured effect. And Patrick McEwen, and who's in Ireland, has done a ton of, he's written books and books about asthma and breathing. And there's dozens of studies to show this. A Papworth method was developed in the 60s in a hospital in England, and shown to have a huge effect. So just the ways in which we breathe can really help attenuate allergies and asthma. And we know that to be true.
What I also find fascinating is I play a lot of sport, not so much now I'm getting older, but I still do a lot. But and I spend most of my time whilst playing sport breathing through my mouth, because that's what I assume you have to do. Even on like long runs and long cycles, after reading your book, I decided that I would close my mouth. I spoke to a physiotherapist who deals with a lot of sportsmen, and he told me that they tape sportsmen's mouths up. I had no idea about this. Yep. Because you can get better performance out of breathing through your nose. It seems so illogical to me that the idea for me was to take as big a breath in as I could into my lungs whilst I'm running or playing football or whatever I'm doing. But it's true. Breathing through your nose is the way we're supposed to do it, aren't we?
And exactly right. And I had assumed this as well. It's like when I'm reaching really I'm really pushing it, I'm surfing, I'm running, whatever, I need more oxygen. So I thought by breathing that way was going to allow my body more oxygen, but the opposite is happening. And this is so counterintuitive that it took me months to get my heads around, but we've known this for 100 years. When you overbreathe like this, that lightness that you feel in your head and maybe the tingling you feel in your fingers, that's caused by constriction in these areas. Because when you off-gas all of that CO2, you are constricting your ability to circulate blood efficiently. So by breathing slower and by breathing through the nose, you can push it harder, you can go faster, you can go longer, and you can recover so much more quickly. And there's decades of research showing this with triathletes, ultra runners, basketball players, football. I mean, you name it. And they used to, in the 50s, they used to train people like this all the time. They would have runners take a huge gulp of water and run around the track, and then they'd have to spit up that water in a cup, and it needed to be the same amount of water to force them to breathe through their nose. That seems a little draconian. I'm not sure I'd do that, but you can start off by just being aware of your breathing when you're at these moments of extremely high endurance, and try to breathe through your nose. It can take some people, they've shown, weeks or months to adapt to this, which is why so many people give up on it. But once you adapt to it, the benefits are enormous.
James, what I found was I decided to do it on my cycle rides to close my mouth. And what I found is, to begin with, I felt like I was suffocating. Yep. And it was really horrible. But I stayed with it. My body went into panic. And I was like, I can't do this, because I desperately need to take a huge lung full of air. Then what happens is your breathing slows down. That's what I found anyway. But you take in these really forceful breaths, and you feel that your rib cage and everything opens up, because you want to extend your breath all the way down into the bottom of your lungs. Am I having the same feelings that you're talking about?
Absolutely. And it takes a while, which is why they highly suggest people go into this softly. Acclimate your body. You know, as Westerners, we hear something, we just want to go for it. And that's exactly what I did. But the body needs time to adjust. It's just like any other muscle, right? So that panic, that feeling you're experiencing, is not a lack of oxygen, it's CO2. That's what triggers the need to breathe. And what I've done on a stationary bike, and this is an experiment I did with Stanford, is we were looking at the difference between mouth breathing and nasal breathing in endurance. And I found, and this was a repeat of a test that had been done in the 90s by Dr. John Duyar here in the US. And we found that you can increase your endurance and your performance, and this was just with two people, about 7%. And this was over 2 weeks. So just imagine if you did this over 2 months. Or 2 years. So that panic you're feeling, what they've suggested you do is you only work out as hard as you can while you're breathing correctly. If your breathing starts faltering and you start losing it, you need to slow down and slowly acclimate yourself to breathing this way. And a lot of us are impatient. I know I just said that, but the science is very clear. Once you condition the nose, once you condition the lungs to breathe this way, you can go so much further and so much harder in all of these activities.
So apart from speaking, James, is there any reason why we should breathe through our mouth then? Because I assume speaking, it helps to breathe through your mouth. I'm making that up. I don't know whether it does or not. I feel that's probably the way I'm doing it, and maybe singing. I don't know. But
yeah, I mean, We've got a mouth, we can breathe through it for a reason. It's a great backup system. If anything happens to the nose, if we get punched or if we're completely obstructed from being sick, we can breathe through our mouth. What a wonderful thing. And occasionally breathing through your mouth, that's going to have no effect. If you're laughing, if you're occasionally talking, no problem. But think about those 25,000 breaths we take a day, right? If 500 of those are mouth breaths, that's probably okay. If the rest are nasal breaths, that's the key, is healthy breathing as a habit. So right. It's been ironic for me the last month, doing a ton of interviews. I'm breathing through my mouth all the time as I'm talking about the benefits of nasal breathing, because I'm talking so much.
Yeah.
But I definitely feel it. I feel this difference from mouth breathing. And again, it's not a placebo. This is biology.
Since I've been reading your book, I've been trying to keep my mouth closed as much as possible. And I feel calmer. I really do, especially in those moments where I think, close your mouth. Then your breathing just changes. The rhythm changes dramatically. But I was just thinking there, when we were talking about breathing through the mouth, I swim quite a bit. I cannot imagine swimming and not taking in a huge lung full of air when you swim. I mean, swimmers must breathe through their mouths, mustn't they? Do you know anything about that?
Of course. And I surf all the time, and I'm out in the water here in San Francisco all the time, and I'm breathing through my mouth. So, and there's no other way to do it, especially surfing, salt water in your nose. I try to breathe through my nose, but I'm mostly breathing through my mouth. But again, so you go and you swim for half an hour, you swim for 45 minutes, you're working out, breathing through your mouth. When you come out, you need to switch those channels and start breathing through your nose again. It is interesting to me that so many swimmers have asthma, and they're one of the largest populations of people in sports, of athletes that have asthma, and they believe it's correlated to the chlorine, but it could be related also to taking those kinds of breaths. This is by no way, I'm warning people off of swimming. I'm a water person. I much prefer water sports than stuff on land. So I'm not going to stop doing it. But again, it's those habitual breaths. If you can fix your breathing at night and you breathe only through the nose, you're way ahead of the curve. And one thing I wanted to mention, when you're working out on a bike, I don't know if it's a stationary bike or a regular one, but if you get a pulse oximeter, these little devices that can calculate the blood saturation of O2, and you keep that on as you're working out, I think you are going to be fascinated by what happens when you take these very slow breaths, even if you're really going for it. I've found my oxygen does not go down, and in some cases actually increases the slower I start breathing. So that's a neat little metric you can use.
Do you know what I was just thinking when you're talking about cycling there? I don't know if you're aware, but most of the cycling teams have a disproportionate amount of asthma sufferers in their teams. I think it's got something to do with some of the drugs you're allowed to take when you're asthmatic. But I'm wondering whether, because they go for such long distances, and if they're breathing heavily and they start opening their mouths, it could be a similar sort of thing, maybe.
Of course, and Patrick McEwen has done so much work in this. Again, he's the real authority on nasal breathing, on slow breathing, and sports and fitness. And I've learned a lot from his books and from various talks with him. And that's exactly what he's found. And you change that pathway of breathing. It's so obvious and so simple that it seems impossible to be true until you look at the data, until you talk to these people and look at the science. And then it's mind-blowing. You can increase your VO2 max by breathing slower, not breathing more. It's very interesting to me.
You know, I'm sorry to keep banging on about sports, but I'm fascinated by the power sports as well. Things like, you know, let's just take basketball, for instance. It's such a powerful sport when they're under that ring. LeBron James, Michael Jordan, whoever we're talking about, when they're going through the cutting through towards the basket or whatever, they surely must be taking gulps from their mouth. I mean, I don't know. I haven't analyzed the footage. I might go back and start watching it. But these guys, when you get very active like that. But then I suppose if I'm looking at mammals like a cheetah running, they don't open their mouths to run, do they? So I suppose we're made not to.
And here's basketball. You know, it's a 90-minute game, and these people at extreme moments are opening their mouths before they're dunking. Check out Michael Jordan. If you ever see him right before he dunks, he goes and takes this huge gasp of air. But it's no coincidence that the top athletes have the lowest, traditionally, the lowest resting heart rates. Mm. How do you get a low resting heart rate? You can't do that if you're you do that by breathing slowly. So for the rest of the time, they've conditioned themselves to breathe slowly. And I was just talking to Pat Williams yesterday, who was the owner of the Orlando Magic here, basketball team. And we were talking about asthma and some players. I see these guys, JaVale is one example, but guy who has asthma, he's gotten pneumonia, he's breathing through his mouth the whole time, and he's breathing way too much. And once you see this, it's like you're looking behind the curtain at breathing. And I don't understand. They train these guys in every other imaginable way, but they're not training their breathing, which just seems nuts to me. It's such a powerful tool.
Yeah, James, they're also taking more time out to analyze all their sleep as well, which is obviously connected to this. But they're getting like LeBron and all the great athletes to sleep for more than a normal person because they're exercising so much and maybe sleeping for a couple of times a day, which is strange because as humans, we always think, oh, they're lazy. But actually, sleep is so vital to us. And good sleep, I imagine, by breathing properly is even more important. Go on, no.
I was just going to say, they did a study at the Mayo Clinic here in the U.S., and they found that the majority of people with insomnia weren't suffering this from psychological problems. They were suffering it because they weren't breathing properly, because they had airway resistance. And to me, those two things, again, just go hand in. You can't have good sleep if you're not breathing properly.
So I have to say, going back to right at the beginning of this, since I've been taping my mouth shut, I feel like I'm actually properly asleep. And when I do wake up, I seem to tend to just fall straight back to sleep again. It's quite strange having the thing on your mouth, but it feels the sleep might be more quality. And you definitely, when you wake up and you come down for breakfast, you're breathing only through your nose and very, very conscious of it. Even though the tape's gone, you've got yourself into a rhythm and it feels really nice. I don't know whether it's placebo or not, but at the moment I'm really quite enjoying the experience. It's good. The one bit in your book that I'm sort of slightly confused about is what do I need? Do I need carbon dioxide or do I need oxygen? I'm very confused by this bit.
This is yin and yang. So you need these, both of these things. We usually only think about oxygen, but we need a healthy balance of CO2 and O2. And this gets even more confusing because for O2 to dislodge most easily and most efficiently, you need carbon dioxide. That's how the system works. So if you don't have enough CO2 in your body is going to compensate on ways to get that carbon dioxide, which after a while is going to make your body overworked, and it's going to cause a bunch of problems. So this is why if you in an airport, whenever we can go back to those places, those wonderful places, you see an oxygen bar, or you see like a footballer like breathing oxygen at the sidelines, that oxygen for a healthy body is not doing anything because you're taking it in and you're just exhaling it back out. You need carbon dioxide there to dislodge that oxygen efficiently. So that's really the key.
Finally, I think on this, actually, no, just a couple more points. The first one is you make a, should we be breathing more or less? I mean, it's kind of complicated, this, isn't it? Because it's for different aspects, but there's a school of thought that we breathe too much, isn't there?
Absolutely. What I've found and what I've learned from various experts in the field is most of us are breathing way too much. And it's similar to idling a car at a stop sign and just revving the motor. You don't need that much air. So 3/4 of the air you take in, you're going to exhale anyway. So if you can use the air that you take in more slowly, more carefully, more efficiently, your heart rate's going to go down. All the systems of your body are going to function more normally. You're going to likely increase your circulation. You can do more with less. So the point isn't to keep gasping, gasping, gasping. It's to be efficient with those breaths. And this is universally understood. Almost universally understood. Some areas aren't quite understanding it, but it's proven. This has been proven time and time again.
We won't go into them now, but you've got lots of exercises in the book at the end for breathing techniques. It's worth buying the book just for those. I mean, you've got about 10 different ideas there to help you improve your breathing. Final thing I think we should just talk about, because I think it's poignant and I think it demonstrates how bad mouth breathing is for you. For the purposes of the book, you taped your nose up for a period of time. The effects of that were horrific for you, weren't they?
Yeah, when we had known that mouth breathing was bad news, we just didn't know how quickly it turned on. And I found no studies on it. So working with Stanford, working with the chief of rhinology research, we did a study with two people, because that's the maximum amount of people we could find that would actually want to do this. I was one of them, and Anders Olsson, who's a breathing therapist from Sweden, volunteered. I don't know why, but I was so happy he did. And just right off the bat, just by inserting silicone in our noses so that we were only breathing through our mouth, we went from not snoring at all to snoring. We got sleep apnea. We were fatigued. Our performance went down. My blood pressure went through the roof, shot up about 10, 15 points just by breathing through the mouth. And when we switch that, and for 10 days, we're just breathing through our nose, or primarily through our nose as much as we could. Snoring disappeared, sleep apnea disappeared, blood pressure went down. So it's such a dramatic thing. It's so obvious that these different mechanisms are working in this way. The science all checks out. But again, it's something I just don't think a lot of people think about. I certainly hadn't thought about it till I stumbled upon this research. And once you feel it in your own body, as you are right now at the beginning stages of this, you become quickly convinced. And this is not a placebo effect. And you can see this with pulse oximeters at night. If you sleep with a pulse ox on, if you record with Snore Lab, you can see how your sleep benefits by just changing the pathway through which you breathe.
You're right. It has changed the way I view things a lot, actually. It's It's fascinating. I really value sleep after speaking to Mia Krieger on this in this podcast, and you know, I valued breathing through Wim Hof, but this is a completely different aspect of it. The idea that I should be breathing properly all the way through the day. And I found myself with my mouth open so regularly. I'm sure a lot of people do. Are you still feeling that, or have you completely knocked it now? Are you mouth shut constantly?
Well, I think I was such a bad breather that this is taking me a while to really adjust, you know? So I'm conscious of it, which is really the first step, just as you are right now. Once you're conscious of it, it's so much easier to control. But the point with all of these things isn't to walk around like a neurotic, you know, worried about, oh my God, I just laughed there. I breathed through my mouth. No, no, no. It's to be cognizant of it so that these things eventually become a habit. So mouth taping, breathing through my nose now, this is just a habit that I do at night. And I felt a huge difference from it. During the day, if I'm stressed out, I can use those levers of breathing to calm myself down. Again, it's not a placebo. You can measure the effects of slow breathing. And it works wonders. And this is something we carry with us all the time. We don't need any other gizmos or apps. We've got a brain, we've got lips, we've got a nose and lungs, and we can just use our natural body to, in so many ways, to help heal ourselves and to improve our health.
I'm going to ask you the questions I ask everyone now, James, but just before that, I suppose we should say when taping the mouth, you're not using Sellotape and gaffer, you're using a form of, I don't know, what do you call it? Medical adhesive, some sort of.
So I've received about 200 emails about this in the last month since the book is out. And, you know, as I tell everyone, I'm not a therapist. I'm a journalist who went into this world. But to answer these questions, I interviewed an expert in the field, Dr. Mark Berhenny. It's on my site. It's on YouTube. It's free for everyone. No one's selling anything. And we get into the practice of how to do this properly and exactly what happens when you do this to your body, how it responds. So I can give you quick particulars now. Surgical tape, micropore tape for sensitive skin, hypoallergenic stuff. You can buy this at any drugstore. You just get a roll, take a teeny piece about the size of a postage stamp, middle of the lips, you're good to go. You can see exactly what this looks like in that interview.
What's your website if people want to check that out?
Sure. It's mrjamesnestor.com, and you can go /breath. And this is in the FAQ section of that. You'll see it.
Is Mr. MR, Mr.?
Yeah, James Nestor. People thought this was some cutesy thing, but some other jerk took James Nestor, so I had to put the MR in front of that.
Hey, that's fine. All right, let's ask the questions that we ask everyone. What one piece of advice would you like to give our listeners that's been invaluable to your life?
I think to be curious, whomever you meet is going to have something to tell you that you don't know. And by constantly being curious and talking to people, that's how I do my job. And I've found that by far, I've found people who are the real experts in the field by talking with people and having that network and constantly being curious. You don't find them online. You find them by learning and by listening.
What's something you think people should know?
I think people should know that your body is not a foregone conclusion, especially in middle age. You know, we can drastically affect our lung size. We can affect the bone modeling in our face. We can take control of our nervous systems. We can take control of aspects of our immune systems. All of these things we've been told are impossible. Nope, can't do it. Totally wrong. We can do this. And so much of this is tied to breathing.
I love that. I love that, James. Any life hacks?
Yeah. You know, I thought about this a little bit, but I think this can sound really negative, but I think that persistence doesn't always pay off. And let me explain what that means. I'm not trying to be derogatory. I mean, when we're told that anyone can do anything, we're giving them a false hope. You need to have a natural inclination towards something. And then you can be persistent and pick your lane and really go into it. And I think that that's the key. I can't think that I'm going to be president or footballer or a rock star right now. It's not going to happen, but I can pick something within my scope. And that's how I think you can achieve happiness in your professional life.
James, I think the whole world is looking at your country thinking, I could be president. judging by the one you've got at the moment.
If only, man, you know, we got 30 million people here. Anybody would be doing a better job. 8-year-old would be fantastic. So you don't know how embarrassing this is for us out here, but I think you might.
I think Donald Trump might be a mouth breather. I think he's probably got sleep apnea as well. He's always tweeting in the middle of the bloody night. So there you go. Is there something you've changed your mind about?
Dozens and dozens and dozens of things, and just all in the last, you know, hour. So I change my mind all the time, and I don't view that as some being flaky or flip-flopping. I think we grow by understanding and acknowledging different facts throughout our lives, and this allows us to be more honest and to continue going forward and growing. The idea that you've just got this one set of beliefs and that's it, and that's what you're going to stick with, I think that that's leads you down the wrong path.
Yeah, sadly, these days with social media, you got to pick a side, pick a team, and go for it. And then you've got to have your bias in place, your confirmation bias, and then, you know, that's the way of the world at the moment, sadly. James, can you recommend a book for us?
I've been rereading Giovanni's Room by James Baldwin, which is this beautiful, precise book about what it really feels like to be on the fringes of society. And what that looks like and what you experience when you're out there. And it doesn't really proselytize anything. You know, it's just done in this very light-handed and poetic way. And it's a book I've probably read 4 times, but I'm rereading it now just to reacquaint myself with that world.
Perfect. And the final question for you, the easy one, is what's the meaning of life?
An eternal question for which I have an eternal answer, which is I have no idea. And I think anyone who says they do is lying or trying to con you out of something. I will say that, you know, in a bit of a twist, I think to find a life with meaning is everything. I've lived it both ways. And so I think I know the difference, at least for myself. And to wake up feeling like you're contributing to something bigger, that you're a part of something larger, I believe keeps you grounded and keeps you moving forward in a positive way.
So what do you mean by that? You found meaning in your writing.
I was a very respected individual in society at one time with a suit on and a job and a staff and all of that. And very late in life, in my mid 30s, I gave it all up and said, I can't do this anymore. And went to pursue journalism, my true love that I never thought I could make a living with, but I kept plugging away at it. And, you know, it's not the easiest job at all, especially now, but I wake up in the morning and I'm much more happy that I've made that decision.
Well, I'm glad you did as well, James, because, you know, I'm not just saying this because you're on the podcast, but the book has been, I'd go as far to say life-changing, because I'm trying all the things. I desperately want to stop snoring. So I'm giving that a go. And the idea of breathing through my nose, it really appeals to me. I need to get everybody in my family on board with this as well, because we have a few people with allergies in the family too. So thank you so much for joining me today. Your book, Breath, The New Science of Lost Art, is out now. And if people want to follow you on Twitter, is that the best place to go to follow you?
Sure. Mr. James Nestor. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I'm trying to get better at that social media stuff. So Instagram's probably the main spot where I'm posting the most right now.
Perfect. Thank you so much for joining me today. Thanks, James.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Bye. That was James Nestor. I must say, I do recommend his book, Breath, The New Science of Lost Art. I thoroughly enjoyed reading it. It's always the simple things, isn't it? Like breathing and sleeping, stuff we take for granted that we probably need to work on. Also eating, getting the jaws going. It's true. I've not thought about it, that we have soft food, maybe too much soft food. Anyway, thank you for joining me on the podcast. If you want to contact me, you can, as always, at Tim Lovejoy on Twitter or dearlovejoypodcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much to Cooker For sponsoring this podcast, 100 degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. Mine does hot water, it does cold water, it does 100 degree boiling hot water, it does filtered, it's chilled filtered water, and it does chilled sparkling water. It's absolutely amazing. I love the product and I love them so much for sponsoring the podcast. I will see you all very soon, or speak to you all very soon. For the time being, peace and love, Joy.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.